Hello, listeners, and thank you for tuning in to the Eyewitness History Podcast. It was just last week that actor Matthew Perry died. He was 54 years old, found dead of an apparent drowning at his house in Los Angeles on Saturday. He is, of course, best known for his role as Chandler Bing from the show Friends. And in his memory, I wanted to re-release an interview that I did with director Jonathan Lynn. Jonathan Lynn is a world-renowned director. He's directed classics such as My Cousin Vinny, as well as one of my personal favorite movies, Clue. He also directed Matthew in the movie The Whole Nine Yards. He also read Matthew Perry's memoir, published last year, called Friends, Lovers, and the Big Terrible Thing. So I think I'll just leave it there. Thanks for listening.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-218-6010. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-218-6010. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-218-6010.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
What was it like to hear about the JFK assassination or America's triumph over Hitler? We're seeing Queen at Live Aid. Our past is a collection of stories that bring us to now. Welcome to the Eyewitness History Podcast, where we view history through the eyes of the people that watch the events that shaped our world. Here's your host, Josh Cohen, and these are their stories.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Eyewitness History. I am your host, Josh Cohen. This episode, I have the great pleasure and privilege of speaking with Jonathan Lynn. Jonathan Lynn has directed 10 feature films, including the cult classic Clue. He also wrote the screenplay, which happens to be one of my all-time favorite movies. Nuns on the Run, which he also wrote. One of my other favorite movies, My Cousin Vinny, and The Whole Nine Yards. For television, Jonathan's writing credits include dozens of episodes of various comedy series, but he is best known for the phenomenally successful multi-award-winning BBC series Yes, Minister, co-written and created with Anthony Jay. And his numerous awards include the BAFTA Writers Award, the Writers Guild, the Broadcasting Press Guild, the NAACP Image Award, the Environmental Media Award, the ACE Award for Best Comedy Series on U.S. Cable, and a special award from the Campaign for Freedom of Information. It was such a pleasure and honor speaking with him. As I mentioned, Clue is one of my all-time favorite movies, which I watched ad nauseum growing up. And I think I'll just leave it there. And now I give you Jonathan Lynn. How did you get involved in directing The Whole Nine Yards?
You see, you never really know how these things happen. One of the producers, called Alan Kaufman, I think he'd seen one of my films, or all of my films, or I don't know, he suggested me. I was surprised because I didn't really know anyone else involved. I didn't know Alan. But obviously I was, you know, when I read the film, I found it entertaining. It needed quite a lot of work. I mean, we made it a lot funnier than the original script had been. But I thought it had huge possibilities. And it was being produced by a man called Eli Semaha, who was a Lebanese producer who owned Celebrity Cleaners, cleaning company all over L.A., and appropriately, lots of celebrities went to his cleaners, and he got to know them. Then he opened a bar and disco, or maybe it wasn't a disco, but a bar with a lot of music called, I think it was called the Roxy on Sunset. And some of the stars who he knew by this time went there, so he got to know them socially. And he came up with this idea, which was, he knew that everybody, every star, had some film that they'd loved but had never got made. Something that was in their bottom drawer. And he said to them, if you come to me with your projects that you want made and you'll star in them, I can raise the money and we'll make them. So they made 10 films that way, of which the only one that made any money was The Whole Nine Yards. And that didn't come about that way. What happened was that David Willis was trying to produce The Whole Nine Yards. It was a very low-budget film. And he gave it to his brother, Bruce, to see if Bruce could help him raise the money. And Bruce read it and said, oh, I'd like to play Jimmy the Tulip. So that meant the film could get financed. So this film that hadn't been able to be financed for ages was financed immediately by Elie Sommer. And then we got Matthew Perry, who was, you know, hugely popular for Friends. And Elie had a deal to make the film in Montreal, make all his films in Montreal. Unfortunately, The Whole Nine Yards was set in Miami, and you can't find anything less like Miami than Montreal.
Right.
So I said to Elie, we can't shoot in Montreal, it's Miami. He said, I don't care what it is, that's where my deal is, shoot it in Montreal. So, and the only way to do that was to rewrite it for Montreal. So we did. And so that's how it came about.
Wow, that's extraordinary.
That was your question, how did it come about?
Yeah, it was, Jonathan. I appreciate it very much. As you probably know, Matthew Perry just released his autobiography. Yes. Well, if it's okay, I'd like to quote something to you and get your thoughts on it. So he wrote about The Whole Nine Yards, obviously, A Whole Nine Yards. The director, Jonathan, who for some unknown reason I had taken to calling Sammy, ran the kind of set I love, a very creative one. The best joke, no matter where it came from, would be picked, just like we did on Friends, end quote. Have any initial thoughts or reactions?
Well, I'm glad he feels that. I think that's true. I could tell you why he called me Sammy.
Yeah, please.
I was standing on the corner with him one day with, I think it was with Bruce Willis and Kevin Pollock and Matthew, and autograph hunters approached our little group and wanted autographs from everybody. And Matthew knew that I wouldn't want to get into conversations about I was the director and, you know, so forth. So he said, this is, you know, here, Bruce, he'll sign, and this is my Uncle Sammy. So I became Uncle Sammy.
That's hilarious.
And yes, it was true. Matthew came in nearly every day with new funny ideas. He was wonderfully creative.
Hmm.
You know, some of them I didn't like, some of them didn't work, some of them were wonderful and are in the film. We punched the film up a lot during the shoot, and Matthew and I seemed to have a sort of really good partnership on that. He was really creative. And I loved working with him, and I'm terribly sorry that he's had such a miserable life ever since. I didn't realize that he was an alcoholic. You know, I don't read gossip columns, and apparently other people who knew about Friends knew that, or maybe some people knew it. I didn't know it. And he used to like to go drinking every night after the shoot, and one of the things a director does is, you know, make all the actors feel comfortable. So whenever Matthew said, come, let's go out for the evening and have a few, I said yes. So I did. And I couldn't understand why the next morning I was fine, and Matthew occasionally would come in looking wrecked. Of course, what I hadn't understood was that he'd been drinking or using some drug all night. And when I finally understood that, it became clear to me during the shoot, I tried to get him to do less. But nobody can. You know, that's up to him. And he's had his book is really extraordinary, I think. Very interesting, very moving, well written.
Yeah.
I hope it goes very well. And I hope that he's got over his alcoholism, but I don't know that if he has or not. It's not clear from the book.
No, it isn't. But yeah, I would feel as you do. I wish him the best. What are you working on currently, Jonathan?
Well, I wrote a novel that came out 3 or 4 years ago called Samaritans, which is about what is laughingly known as the healthcare system in this country. And it's set in a hospital where the management, the board, are very worried because it's beset by rising costs and poor management, and the CEO has just resigned, and they need to find a new CEO. And they hire the head of hotel operations from a Vegas casino because he knows about check-in, check-out, beds occupied, dinner served, and everything you need to make a large building with lots of beds run. The only problem is he's not remotely interested in healthcare. He's just interested in profit. So that is the satirical notion at the basis of the book. And in fact, when I was writing it, I discovered that this is more or less had happened. The head of the CEO of Caesar's Palace in Vegas, when it was going bankrupt, was hired by Aetna, which is one of the three biggest health insurance companies. So it turned out that my idea was actually plausible, which hadn't struck me before. Anyway, so the book came out. It got very nicely reviewed and received. And it was optioned to make a TV series. And I've just been writing a pilot for the TV series. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, wonderful. So, you know, Jonathan, I expect there's no real answer to this as such, but I am curious how you would describe your process as a director and as a writer.
That's such a hard thing to describe. You don't know where your ideas come from. I mean, as a writer, I'm talking, directing is different. As a writer, one day you read something, you see a newspaper story, somebody says something to you, something that you think, oh, there's a story in there. And then you go off by yourself, or I go off by myself, and I sit in my office, and I stare at the wall, I stare out of the window, and I hope that some interesting new thoughts will come to me in connection with the original thought. And so I sort of slowly and painstakingly construct a story, and I do a lot of research. I mean, even for completely ridiculous, facetious films like Clue, of course, I researched McCarthyism and America in the 50s. And, you know, it's hard to describe. Then anyway, I try to write a rough story. I don't do a rigid outline the way some people do. I write an opening. I know what it's about, and I don't start writing till I know what the ending is. I have to know how it's going to work out. That may change by the time I've written it, but I can't start something without knowing where it's going, because that's really the point of it. So when I've got that, I usually just start writing and hoping that something will come into my head every day that's not boring. And every day for me, writing is a big new adventure. I don't really know what's going to happen. I don't know what the characters are going to say. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what's going to happen next. I have a rough idea, but it's an adventure. And occasionally, it doesn't go anywhere and I give it up. Harold Pinter, you know, the great playwright and screenwriter, I used to know him a little. And he told me about a play that he was writing and that he stopped writing. And the reason was, he said, I stopped listening to the character. I'm not listening to the characters. Now, that's inexplicable to people who write with a sort of a structure and an outline. And a lot of people do that. The film industry wants you to have a clear outline. I wrote a film once for Disney, and we'd had many, many meetings about what the exact structure of the film. And just before I started writing it, the producer phoned me up, and she said, I read about the scene in the library. And I said, I haven't written it yet. And she said, well, no, but you know, the scene that we've talked about in the library, and I'm worried about. And I said, look, that scene, we've talked about it, but it may not be in the finished script. I may not write it. What? And I said, well, no, it depends what leads up to it. It depends how it goes. It depends how the characters have developed. It can't just be, it can't all be set in advance. Some people like to set it all in advance, but I don't. So then your other question was about directing.
Yes, sir.
What's my process with directing? I don't know how to answer that either. My process as a director. Well, it's what I really described to you earlier. You have to like the script. You have to see the possibilities. You have to have some kind of sense of how it will work visually, why it's dramatically interesting. Can you cast it? All of those questions. Can the money be raised? I mean, I've worked on many films where we couldn't raise the money.
Yeah.
Good scripts. Not some by me, some by other people. But for some reason, they weren't considered commercial by the people who run this industry. And the process as a director is I like to rehearse. Some film people don't like to do that, but I think it makes life much, much easier. Sidney Lumet always rehearsed. Some directors do. I like to, partly because of my theatre background, I suppose, but partly because, how can I put this? When you're shooting, it's all about how much time you waste in the day, which I explained to you already. If you've rehearsed, the actors know what they're going to do in advance. They know where they're going to stand. They know what they're thinking. They're not going to come on the set at 7 o'clock in the morning and say, I don't understand this scene. What's my motivation?
Right.
You discussed all that in rehearsal. And if it didn't work for them, you changed it in rehearsal. So it also means if you rehearse that you can set up the cameras and the lights at 7 o'clock in the morning or whatever time you're starting. And if the actors are late or delayed in wardrobe or delayed in makeup or any other delay happens, we could go ahead without the morning rehearsal because they've already rehearsed it. So they can just come in. We walk through it. They don't have to give a performance. The result of all this is that you can shoot much, much faster. And that has two advantages. The first is that it saves a lot of money. You know, if you can shoot something in 35 days instead of 50 days, you can see that's a huge saving. And I do shoot pretty fast. I mean, the whole 9 yards, which you like, was shot in 34 days, which is very fast.
Yes.
But it's because we rehearsed for 10 days and the actors remembered the rehearsals and it was, you know, made it much, much easier. There's another reason, which I was going to mention, but it's now slipped out of my mind. Speed. Well, yes. I mean, it's all about the cost and the speed. So high to rehearse, I think it makes it much easier for everybody. Now, some people don't like to rehearse. Joe Pesci doesn't like to rehearse. So have any rehearsals in advance for Vinny, because the director's job is to make everything, is to help everybody on the film to do their best work. So because Joe felt spontaneity was vital to him and he didn't want to rehearse in advance, we only rehearsed on the day of each scene. So, of course, it made the shoot somewhat longer.
Oh, fascinating. Thank you, Jonathan. I appreciate it. I know you got to get going, Jonathan. Jonathan Lynn, this was such a pleasure. It was an honor. I've been looking forward to having this conversation for a long time, so I can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking time for me.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, Joshua, and thank you very much for asking me.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jonathan. I'll let you go. You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you'd like to support Eyewitness History, the easiest way to do that would be to subscribe to the show on the podcast player of your choice and leave a review. For more information on Eyewitness History, along with show notes and links to resources, go to ParthenonPodcast.com, where you can also listen to some other great podcasts by the Parthenon Podcast Network, such as Scott Rank's History Unplugged, Steve Guerra's History of the Papacy, James Early's Key Battles of American History, and Richard Lim's This American President, along with many others. Thank you.
The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.